Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, January 3rd, 2016. This is episode 1250. Enjoy. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hey, 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 welcome. The second Tech Guy show of the brand new year. This is the show where we talk about all those things with chips in them, like computers and the internet, and home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. We answer your questions. We help you get the most out of them. We help you buy a new one and get rid of the old one when it's done. That's the promise and the premise of this show. Brand new year, 2016. You know, in many ways, 2015 was a landmark year for e-commerce. I was just thinking, 2015, the just finished holiday buying season, was the first time we know of, and I think the first time ever, by a small margin, that more people shopped online than shopped in physical stores. More people bought their holiday gifts online on Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and in the weeks after, than did in physical brick-and-mortar stores. In some ways, that's a shocker. In some ways, it's, you know, it took this long, right? I mean, didn't we see this coming a long time ago? How old is Amazon? More than a decade old. I guess I'm kind of one of those canaries in the coal mine. I am one of the early adopters of online shopping. I very rarely go into stores anymore. We don't go in banks anymore either, right? I mean, if you could do it online, why wouldn't you? Well, maybe you want to try things on for size or hold them. But that's even that seems to be more and more out of date. It's one of the things online retailers are working hard to do to solve that problem. Zappos, the shoe store, does it by making it very easy to return stuff. Free, fast, and easy. And that way, you buy, and I see my wife do this. She does it with other online clothing stores. She buys all the things she likes. She doesn't know if they'll fit. She tries them on at home, often picking one outfit out of 10 and shipping the rest back. And I think the online retailers understand this is the cost of doing business because people aren't going to buy clothes from an online retailer if it's not easy to send them back. And I imagine over time, I think this is true for me, I now know what kind of what sizes work for me in any given store or any given brand. And so I can order with some confidence. And certainly if it's an electronics, I buy that at Amazon with 2-day shipping. Why not? So I guess it kind of makes sense. It's a big transition. I mean, I've been doing this show long enough that I remember people calling in and saying, is it safe to shop online? More, you know, in a sense that it really isn't. You know, they I don't think it's safe. This is not safe. They want my credit card. I think now, well, let me ask you. You feel safe shopping online, right? I always said, you know, how do you feel safe giving your credit card to a server, to a waiter, and having him take it back and disappearing for 3 minutes and then coming back and say, here's your bill? You've lost control of that card in that period of time. There's all sorts of scams of people stealing the card by swiping it with a card reader or taking it. You know, they could take a picture of it with their smartphone nowadays and get all the information and use that card. So really, in a way, I think you're safer using your card online. Too bad you can't do that for restaurants. You got to go to restaurants in person. But you're safer using your card online than you are in real life, I believe. The security established, you know, well-known, tried and true security established now between your computer and the online retailer that is there. It's very good. And I think that growing realization is one of the reasons that e-commerce has exploded last year. I expect this year it's going to be bigger and bigger and bigger, right? Do you buy stuff online? Let's talk about it. Do you buy stuff online? Are you comfortable doing that? It's interesting because we have an advertiser that makes mattresses they sell online. And that's a challenge, isn't it? Actually, we have several companies who advertise with my podcast that sell stuff that traditionally you would expect you'd have to sell in a brick and mortar store. A mattress is a good example. Sheets, a good example. Clothing. We have one advertiser that I won't name the names because they're not paying for ads, and it doesn't matter because there are many companies doing this. But this advertiser, you have talk to a clothing consultant. You say what kind of clothes you want. They show you on a website what they're going to send you. They send it to you. You try it on, and then they don't charge you for anything until you send the box back with it comes in a big box, and you put everything you don't want back in the box. You don't even have to fold it. It's really easy to send back. At no cost to you. And they only bill you when they get the box back and see what you kept. And they only bill you for what you kept. That's how you solve that problem, right? It's a big retailer that does this, by the way. One of the biggest, best-known names that does this. Interestingly, though, they don't do it under their own name. All right, I'll tell you. It's Nordstrom. And the company that they do online is Trunk Club, because they send you a trunk. But I don't think they want you to know it's Nordstrom. And this is an interesting psychology. I think that the retailers are very nervous. In fact, let's face it. All the old school businesses, newspapers, travel agents, retailers, all very nervous about online because they see it's possible to lose their business to online versions of themselves. So when they do, but they realize they also have to do it. New York Times realized we got to go digital. We got to offer digital paper. Washington Post was sold to Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, with his money. It's not an Amazon company. It's his company. And he says there's one mission and one mission only. That's to get digital subscription up to the point where it can sustain the newspaper. Without that, there's no future. So, but at the same time, they don't want to cannibalize their existing business. So there are a lot of companies that do what Nordstrom does, create a new brand, different name. Dip our toes into the digital water, but without hurting our brick and mortar or our print business or our real life business. That's one way to handle it. It's not always easy to make that transition. There are plenty of examples where companies saw digital coming and couldn't make the transition. The one I always use as an example is Kodak, great company. They made the first digital camera. They knew digital photography was going to change the world. They knew that their business, photo processing, making film, selling cameras, had to change. And they jumped on the bandwagon early. They made the first digital camera long before anybody else did. It was very, very expensive. This is 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago, 30 years ago, almost. And they jumped on the online developing. They bought a company called Ophoto that you take your digital photos, upload them, and they make prints, or you could send them your film. I mean, they really got into it big time, and it wasn't enough. And the reason is, and this is the problem that the New York Times faces, that Washington Post faces, Nordstrom faces, Beautyrest faces, is the businesses they've built are based on a model that doesn't fit the model of online. For instance, in Kodak's case, they made the bulk of their profits on photo processing and developing and printing photos. And even though they went big time into digital, they couldn't make the same kind of profits that they made in developing and printing. And so they eventually went bankrupt. They went out of business because there was no business. The digital business couldn't support them in the way that the physical business did. And I think that, unfortunately, that may be the fate. A lot of newspapers, of course, going away. It's interesting to watch the biggest newspapers, maybe sometimes the most important newspapers in America, like the New York Times and the Washington Post, do as good as well as you can do. I mean, nobody would argue the New York Times and the Post are savvy and doing as well as you can do, and it's still a big question mark. So as we move toward e-commerce, you know what I do? I go down to the local camera store and I get my film developed there because I want to have a local camera store. I buy books at the local bookstore because I want to have a bookstore. And there are many towns now that don't even have bookstores anymore. There are literally no bookstores. They've gone the way of the movie rental stores. There's no market for it. We live in interesting times. That's my job, to chronicle it. I have ringside seats at the revolution, and you do too, as long as you listen to the Tech Guy Show. Website is techguylabs.com. We're going to go to your phone calls next. Lots of calls, lots of questions as we begin a new year. I'm so glad you're here, and I can't wait to see what 2016 brings. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know who you are. We are ready to take our first call of the day. Kim Schaffer is lining them up. We were looking for a nickname for you. I don't think phony is the right one, though.
That's not good.
No, can't use that. No, she's not. If you're nothing if not down to earth and
very
real,
genuine.
The genuine Kim Schaffer has been taking the call. How are you doing? Happy New Year. Happy New Year yesterday. Oh. Here we are in 2016.
Yes, I hope it's a very good year.
Seems very much like 2015 so far.
I still feel like I'm in.
Yeah, I know. It's weird, isn't it? I'll be writing the wrong date on checks. You know, that's an old joke. Does anybody write checks anymore?
I actually am very old school and write.
You write checks?
I wrote three of them yesterday.
What?
Yeah. And I still put 2015.
It's funny. I do not. I'm trying to think. Pay bills? Nope. Pay bills online. Yeah, very rarely write checks. Maybe a few a year. Isn't that amazing?
You do everything online.
It's yeah. What's fascinating to me is how the world changes gradually underneath you, so you don't really notice it. But one day you look up and you're not writing checks, or you haven't been inside a bank in 2 years. You haven't sent a fax in months. Who should I talk to first?
How about Claudia? And she's got mystery disappearing photos, and the geniuses at the Apple store haven't been able to help her.
this is becoming a common refrain. Let's see if we can help her. Claudia, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, you don't sound happy. What's the matter? What's going on?
No, I'm used to it. this has been going on for years.
I think that's called Stockholm Syndrome. What's been going on?
The easy part, a lot of things, but the simplest thing is that somebody has stolen half of my iPhotos. Well, I know they're not called iPhotos anymore, but the iMac app that's called Photos now.
Yeah.
I used to have many, many thousands of photos, and I had them, and I've used them. I list things on eBay and on a lot of different sites, and so I still have those photos because I know I had them. I can prove I had them.
Because they were on eBay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I see the, I can relist the.
Are these photos you took? They're photos you took, right?
Yeah. Yes. And if I go into my photo apps, tons of them are just not there. Let's say I want to use them again or whatever. So, I mean, I know I had them. I'm not crazy. I can see them in my auctions and all that.
Yeah.
But they're gone. Now, I've gone to the Apple store several times, to the Genius Bar. I've had the chats on the phone. I've had the chats on the internet. Nobody, the best things that they've come up with is somebody found a second library that I have nobody knows where it came from, but the bottom line is they're not in there either.
So I know where the second library came from, by the way. It's your iPhotos library. When you first upgraded to Yosemite and you got photos, the first thing it does is it takes the iPhotos library, migrates it to the new Photos library, but it doesn't delete it because that would be rude. So that's why you have two libraries.
And I asked them if you could merge them, and they said no.
No, they've already been merged. That's the process of upgrading to Photos. So I'm. Let me think about this here.
Well, there's a little more.
Okay.
Sometimes a couple of weeks ago, the search function wasn't working. In other words, you type in a name of something that you have photos of, and a couple of photos may show up, but the other ones that you know you have are not syncing to the search function. It's just not working.
Spotlight's but not then, seeing them.
Yeah, but then all of a sudden, last week, I typed the same search in, and those photos are back. So, but the ones that are really that have been missing for a long, long, long time don't ever seem to come back. And I've gone through both libraries. And
Claudia, you don't back up your computer, do you?
Actually, I do.
Okay, good. Are they in the backup?
No. Looked there. They don't seem to be. What the person at Apple said the other day was that possibly it's what she called the metadata isn't. The names aren't working.
Oh, she's just throwing around big words to make you impressed.
Well, yeah, here's the other
That's thing. Not helpful at all.
Make me do. They all want to wipe my computer down.
Yeah, you know, okay, don't let them do that. So we've talked about that a lot recently. When you get support nowadays, you're talking to some low-level person who has a notebook. They're nice people, and Apple's people are better than most, but they're looking at a notebook, and they go down a list of things that they have to ask you to do. Always, 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 they're going to say, oh, well, what we want you to do is go back to the original operating system, erase the hard drive. You understand why they do that. They're at a remove. They're way far away. They can't get on your computer. They don't know what's going on in your computer. And you may have installed software, all sorts of stuff. But the only way they can kind of get it back to a state where they at least know what's on the computer is by wiping it and going back to the original install. Then it's just like it came from the factory. But there's a problem with doing that in your case. You'd be erasing all the photos.
And they've done it. Well, they've done it, by the way. I've allowed them to do it. And the last one, I was actually active. This last one was in person. She had full access to the computer. She saw it right there.
Yeah, she does it because she needs to know that the stuff that's on your computer is the stuff they understand. And you haven't put, right. You know, Joey's instant photo deleting tool on there or something like that.
Right.
Now, so she made you, I hope, back up your data before she wiped your drive.
Well, no, I actually this time didn't let her because it's been done, you know, so many times.
Yeah, and this isn't helpful. It's not for you that they do that. It's for them so that in case you put something on there that's weird, they're erasing it and starting over. But the fundamental question remains, why are pictures getting deleted? Is it hundreds of them? Is it dozens of them? What would your sense be?
My sense would be hundreds. I can also, I mean, there's more to it. They're also, I personally, because I have so many photos, I've gone through manually deleting all the photos I can many, many times. And a whole bunch of those are bad. So the lady at Apple at the Genius Bar said, oh, I just found a whole other library of your.
Are you using Apple's cloud service, photo cloud service?
Oh, yeah, I was getting to. Yeah, I pay them every month to allow me to have on my iPad, my iPhone, and my computer all of my photos, which also have not been syncing. I mean, just until I was on the phone with them yesterday about why my phone only has a very small number of them. But what seems to happen is a lot of boxes are checked and then get unchecked by themselves, you know, like upload to photo stream, all these boxes that should be checked just arbitrarily become unchecked, and I don't know when
Now that by the way is an excuse or an occasion to wipe the drive and start over, because preferences that change spontaneously usually mean corrupt preferences files, and that could be a hard drive issue. In fact, more and more as I listen to you, I think that you may have a hard drive error. I'll tell you what's going on. There's two, maybe three possibilities. We're going to have to take a break, and I'll tell you what the possibilities are when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the case of the disappearing photos. We've been talking to Claudia in Los Angeles. I'm going to tell you the three scenarios for why your photos are going missing kind of spontaneously. The first, and the one that Apple's thinking, I guarantee you, is something we call PEBCAC. The problem exists between keyboard and computer. It's you're doing something like pressing a delete key inadvertently or perhaps deleting photos. And by the way, I'm not insinuating anything. I'm just telling you these are the three possibilities. But there's something that you're doing inadvertently that's deleting them. That's one. What? Two, there's some sort of random software on there that's doing it. Highly unlikely. The most likely of the three scenarios is that there is something wrong with your hard drive. And this happens, by the way, more commonly than one would think. In fact, I'm of the opinion, having done this for a few years now, that it's the most common computer error. The most vulnerable part of your computer are the moving parts. Your hard drive is moving by all means, 5,200 times a minute, maybe even 7,200 times a minute, spinning around. Heads are moving. Things are happening. Bearings in there. Anything with bearings, man, you're going to have failure. So hard drives fail, I think, much more often than we give them credit for. And there's a whole slew of weird symptoms that are caused by failing hard drives that people don't ascribe to failing hard drives. Things like, my computer is really slow. Well, if your hard drive is starting to fall apart, one of the reasons it would slow your computer down is your computer is spending a lot of time trying to read sectors that are hard to read. Computer doesn't just try once. If it can't read it, it tries again and again and again. Eventually, it gives up, but if it succeeds, well, then it moves on to the next one and tries again and again and again. It can make a computer seem very slow. It can also cause spontaneous random errors and issues. It could also cause spontaneous random deletion of content. Apple has introduced a fourth possibility, and that is that the iCloud is not doing its thing properly. And unfortunately, this may even be the most likely scenario. In this one case, Apple is not very good at cloud services. You're letting iCloud duplicate, store photos. In fact, one of the things that the iCloud photo library does, takes the originals from photos, puts them up on the cloud on your iCloud. In fact, my first thing I would suggest is log into iCloud and look at the Photos app, see if the photos are there. That's supposed to be the canonical database of photos. The originals are supposed to live there in the cloud, and that's where everything else gets those photos from. That's one reason, perhaps, that Spotlight can't find them is they haven't fully downloaded. Now they've downloaded. Now Spotlight sees them, indexes them, and now you're finding them again. They're being moved in and out of the cloud. This was a feature Apple added with Photos I'm not sure I love. The idea was, well, iPhones, people, you know, this is where it came from. And you probably know people like this who take pictures with their iPhone until it's full. They literally fill their iPhone up with images. And then they come to me and they say, I can't use my iPhone. It's full. Have you ever had that happen? All right. And some of these iPhones, you've got 60 gigabytes of photos on here because they never, ever backed them up or moved them off or did anything that's just full. So what happens now with Photos is Photos does move them off. They don't keep originals on your phone. They keep size-appropriate versions on your phone. They save a huge amount of storage. The idea is people don't seem to manage this very well, so we're going to do it for you. The side effect of that is, especially if they don't do it well, weird behaviors like photos disappearing and appearing and going other places. So either your hard drive is having some problems and stuff's getting deleted. You know, it's going missing because it just can't read that sector, for instance. Or, and this may be more likely given what I know about iCloud and iCloud Photo Library, something weird's going on. And iCloud's decided, yeah, that photo doesn't belong there, but it belongs here, and it doesn't. And that could very well be it. So my first suggestion is log into your iCloud account on the net using your browser. Use Safari. Log on your iCloud account. There's a Photos app there. See what's there. That should be everything. Unless you explicitly delete it. And Apple gives you a big warning when you say you're going to delete it. It says, I'm going to delete this from iCloud Photo Library and every other device. You know that, right? So I don't think you're doing that. But if you haven't been doing that, everything should be in the iCloud Photo Library. If stuff is still missing, you should look in the recently deleted album because they don't delete it right away. See what's there. By the way, there shouldn't be a lot there, but if there's a lot there, something thinks you're deleting photos. Maybe you are, maybe accidentally pressing a wrong key. But my strongest advice is to not rely on Apple to make copies of your photos. It's fine. I like the idea of the iCloud Photo Library. Its execution leaves something to be desired in some cases. You should be making copies of your stuff. You should be backing it up and probably not using Time Machine. Periodically, you should get an external hard drive, hook it up to your computer, and copy your iPhotos, or I guess Photos now is the name of your Photos library, over to that external hard drive. And you know, each time you do it, don't erase the old one, keep a new one. Because ultimately, it's your responsibility, no matter what Apple says, no matter how many conveniences, no matter how hard they try to make, you know, this transparent, easy, it's ultimately your responsibility to back up your stuff. And if stuff goes missing, it's because you didn't back it up, and you got to have a backup somewhere. So you need a new strategy. However you've been backing up, don't trust Time Machine, Apple's own backup. You should just make a copy to an external drive of your Photos library on a regular basis and keep previous editions. And that way you can always go back in time. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number if you've got a better idea. You know what, even better than that? The website, techguylabs.com. We put all the questions up there. In fact, each show, day by day, hour by hour, question by question, you can go right there. You can read the question, read my answer, add your comments. After the fact, the audio and the video of the show is put up there. And your input's valuable. So if you have had something like this happen or you have an idea, put that in the comments. TechGuyLabs.com. Of course, it's free. No sign-up necessary. Will always be free. Millie. Mike in Yucaipa, California. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you?
I've got a problem. I'm not at all tech-savvy. Back about 3 weeks ago, I attempted to upgrade my Windows 7 Dell to Windows 10.
Okay.
My first effort, after it had installed, part of it wouldn't work. I think it was the start menu or something. So I took it back to Windows 7.
Yeah.
I re-upgraded. It installed. And then absolutely nothing would work. it totally locked up. I was able to just go and do a system restore on the computer.
Good. Okay.
So I did the system restore. Then I installed Windows 10. It appears to be working properly.
Oh.
So I started adding files back into it and that kind of thing. What I discovered was that when I went to the Windows 10 App Store to download an app, I would get a pop-up that would say, something went wrong, please try again later. Well, later never came. Every time I would try, it still wouldn't work. I went to the Windows or the Microsoft community chat room and posted my problem. Someone there suggested that I just try rebooting, which I'd already done. That did nothing. They suggested that I do a...
I'm going to stop you because this is a known problem.
Okay.
So the we don't know why this happens to some people and not to others. My colleague Mary Jo Foley, who writes about Microsoft for Ziff Davis, has had exactly this problem. The Windows Store was broken. That's what you would say, right? Your Windows Store is not working.
Right. In addition to that, one of the recommendations was to create a new user account.
No.
My user account is a Microsoft account.
MSN. Yeah, you're not going to create a new one. You don't want to.
When I try to do that, it tells me the same thing.
Yeah. No, this is a problem. This is a known problem. And the fix will come in 2 seconds. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I'll say this on the air, but just to complete the thought with you, Mike. Mary Jo, her store wouldn't work. One day it started working. No one ever knew why it wouldn't work. No one ever knew why it got fixed. Have you applied the fall update yet? Did you get that update yet?
The
1511.
I did this update on the 10th, and I got an update, a successful install on the 11th. Security update.
Keep doing. Yeah. There's a big update. They call it the November update. November cumulative update is the name.
Every time I look now, it says I'm up to date, and when I search for updates, it says nothing available.
All right.
The 12th was the last time anything updated.
Are you in front of it right now?
Yes.
Okay. Hit the Windows key, and so you get the start menu pop up.
Right.
And type WINVER. For Windows version, WinVer, and a box would pop up, and it'll tell you what version of Windows you're running.
Nothing's popping up.
You have to get the start menu.
I had that.
Do it again. WINVER, return.
All together?
Yep, one word. WinVer, return.
Nothing. The window just goes black.
I'm just wondering what version of Windows you have. Really, I don't have an answer for you, except that this is something that for some reason happens to some people randomly. And, I know why you don't have it yet. Chat room's reminding me. If you're still in your 30-day rollback period, you know, where if for 30 days it keeps your old version of Windows.
Okay.
And then you could push a button and roll it back. You probably are, given what you've been going through. You won't get this update until after that 31-day period expires. But
okay.
In many cases, including Mary Jo Foley's, it fixed it. But What's weird is no one knows why it doesn't work. We've never been able to track down what's going on. If you search for Windows 10 store doesn't work, you'll find lots of entries for this. It's not an uncommon problem. Everything else is fine, though, right?
Right.
Yeah, it will get fixed eventually. It's not a serious problem, except you can't get to the Windows Store. It drove Mary Jo crazy. But let me just look at
I can go to the store. I just can't download it.
Yeah, it's broken. We will put a link in here. How to fix pending or stuck apps in the Windows 10 store. This is an article that somebody in the chat room found at Windows Central. How to fix pending or stuck apps in the Windows 10 store. Let me see what it says. Open the Windows Store app. Click on the account logo in the upper right, then click your account name. Oh, you log out of your account and then log back in.
Okay.
Try that in the Windows Store. Apparently, for some people, that fixes. If that doesn't fix it, then you can reset the cache. That's another one of those Windows key, and you type WS reset, one word.
And that didn't work.
You already tried that.
Yeah. Yes.
And then there's a Windows up. We'll put a link in the show notes, but if you just Google Windows Central and how to fix pending or stuck apps in the Windows 10 store, some fraction of that, you should find that article. It has about 4 steps, 5 steps. You might want to try all of them.
Should I take this back to 7 and try?
No, you don't need to. This is, truthfully, a minor thing that is going to be fixed, I believe. But you might try some of these things. You know, it's just a weird problem. Mary Jo Foley had it for like 2 months, and then one of the updates, and suddenly it's working.
Okay.
So I think when you get the November update, for sure it will fix. But this is, there's a few things you can try in this article. Might be worth doing. There's more than a few things. There's like 5 steps.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time.
Yeah, I'm sorry I couldn't be more help. But at least you know this is not unusual and it's not a major problem.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. I mean, it is a major problem if you want to get something from the store. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll tell you what, I talked to Mike off the air. He installed Windows 10, wasn't working right, reinstalled it, rolled it back, finally got it working, but the Windows Store is not working, and this is apparently not an unusual problem with a Windows 10 upgrade. Has a mysterious cause, we don't know, but it does seem to fix itself eventually. However, I'll put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com to an article from a few months ago on Windows Central, how to fix pending or stuck apps in the Windows 10 store that seems to help some people. And again, I think as soon as you get the upgrade, you should be okay. I think. Mary Jo was. Moving on, Don is on the line from Hacienda Heights. Hi, Don. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, I'm an Air Force retiree, and I'm being forced to go online to get any information, any problems I have. I have to go through the Air Force MyPay, MyPay.
Yeah.
So when I log on to MyPay, they said the email address you have entered is associated with another user.
Oh, no.
The lady recovered the two files. They both have my sir with my last name, but with different Social Security numbers, and they both have, both emails are used by Air Force people that have retired.
Ah, is the email you're using an Air Force or a .mil address,
no.
Or is it just a commercial, standard commercial email address? Is your email address unusual?
No, it's just sir with my last name.
Yeah.
For me to remember.
Yeah, what sometimes happens
what
is people... Well, go ahead.
Excuse me. Well, Microsoft says there cannot exist multiple exact same email addresses, no more than there can be multiple houses on the same street.
Yeah, they're right.
The exact same street address.
They're right. So this is an Outlook.com address? Or a Hotmail address?
Yes.
Hotmail, yeah. So they know. I mean, they're right.
Or, yeah.
I mean, or live.com. It's a Microsoft email service.
Right.
Yeah, so they're right. It's the same thing as having duplicate phone numbers. It would cause chaos. Not to say that computers have ever made mistakes or anything. So it's conceivable. I think it's more likely that what happened is a guy with the other social mistyped his email address. Problem is, we can't reach him, can we? Because any mails...
No, they can't legally... take that. We can't legally take that email away from him.
It's not his email.
His email.
I understand, but it's not his email. You have that email. That's your email. But if somebody signed up at the MyPay and inadvertently typed the wrong email address, it's now associated with his account as well as your account. The problem is you can't even reach him to say, hey, you gave us the wrong address, because that's the only way they have to reach him.
Well, on the same site, someone else has put in a question. Someone else is using my email address. This guy's name is James Uhlman. And he asked this in August 9th of 2014.
Yeah, but
done this, and he says he's not going to change his email address.
No, so Microsoft's right. You can only have one email address, and any email that's sent to that address is all going to go to that inbox. That's your inbox, nobody else's. You can't have two inboxes with the same address. The computer won't do it. Now, my last name, Laporte@gmail.com, turns out that was a dumb email address for me to use, because anybody who signs up for something and puts a space between their first name and last name, marklaporte@gmail.com, inadvertently puts in a space, I'm going to get it. I get so much French email, you wouldn't believe it. They think there's a woman named Catherine Laporte. I'm getting her email because when she submitted the email to whoever, wrote it Catherine space Laporte. Everything before the space got thrown out. This company thinks that Catherine Laporte, by the way, Catherine, if you're listening, your credit card has been rejected. You've got a fraudulent charge. You might want to call your bank. But I'm getting it because the space, it negated the first name. So everything that goes to Laporte@gmail comes to me. And I suspect, that's why I asked you if you had an unusual email address. I suspect the other guy typed, there's a typo. And he gave your email address inadvertently. You see what I'm saying?
Well, can I give my last name?
You can, but you're going to get some email.
any of his email.
It doesn't.
And since 1969, I've been to about 130 countries and places, and they all asked me, please, on your business card, with your phone number, please put your email.
Yeah, no, your email's out there. I know. No, you don't need to, because it's not going to help me. It doesn't matter what your email is. So if somebody typed an A instead of an E or whatever, the truth is the Air Force MyPay should have a way of resolving this. Do they have a phone number on a record?
Yes, they have a lot of phone numbers, but what they say is that we can't solve this problem, so we're going to send you hard copies.
Because what it is that there's some poor schmuck who has signed up at his MyPay with your email address. And that's why there's two socials.
Email address. Let me just say, it's Sir Hamlin. My last name is Hamlin.
Right.
And I put Sir in front of it.
Yeah. So maybe this guy is Sir Hamlin with an E, but he mistyped it.
Yes, that could be.
He mistyped it. Do you see what I'm saying? So and the problem is he can't be reached to correct this because have you gotten emails from the Air Force saying, please fix your address?
No. They just said I could not register for my pay, so I cannot get my 1099 or my W-2.
Isn't there in the military, I think in the military there's an acronym for this. SNAFU. It's SNAFU, isn't it?
Yes.
You've ever heard of that? When you were in the Air Force, you ever used that?
I've never used that, but government workers just go along
things happen, yeah. And that what the problem is, they've designed a system, unfortunately, that doesn't repair itself easily, because that's what's happened. And you know what? Of course it's happened to other people. It happens all the time to me. I get email in French every day. I get five or six emails in French that are sent to somebody with the last name Laporte, very common name in France, but a different first name because they made a mistake and they put a space, that's what I'm thinking, in their email address. And this poor Catherine Laporte, I've been getting her email for months. Catherine, get in touch with your bank and fix it. I'm sure what happened, she's typed Catherine space Laporte. And when an email server sees a space, it throws out everything before the space. The email address that it's going to use is Laporte. So I'm betting.
I think that this other person has just got an email address only to correspond on his pay.
Maybe it doesn't matter because Microsoft's right. There can't be two people with the same email address. Just there could only be one person per social. The guy has given your email address, inadvertently given your email address as his email address. Unfortunately, this dumb site can't resolve it because it's not well designed. They haven't figured out that this could happen.
Well, they're ending up with a lot more problems with this.
Of course they are. And it's not just you. I guarantee you this is happening to lots of people because typos happen in email. It's not uncommon. There needs to be. That's why you usually want to have a second way of reaching people. Often sites will say, well, give me a second email address and or a phone number. Because if this kind of thing happens, they need a way to correct it. Clearly, it's what's happened because it's two different socials, but the same email address. And we know you didn't sign up for two different socials. So somebody else signed up and gave your email address by mistake. And I don't know how to fix it because I'm not the Air Force. But it does sound like something that there's got to be an acronym for. If it's not SNAFU, it's FUBAR. But there's definitely an acronym for it. And I'm sorry this has happened to you. And it's not Microsoft. It's these guys. One email address per box. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Don, would they let you set up a new email address?
It's an Outlook address. Set up a Gmail.
Can you set up a new email address and then tell them?
I've got many, like I say, up to 130 places and countries in the world, and so it's too late.
Well, no, you could keep your email address, but give the Air Force a different one, is what I'm saying. Is there a capability at MyPay to change your email?
Well, I guess if I don't tell them that I have had this problem with...
Oh, don't say anything.
They got my social security number. They got my social.
Yeah, they got your social. They have a way of identifying. Just say, there must be on the site somewhere to say, hey, I've changed. You got to people change email. Create a new address at Gmail or somewhere, doesn't matter where, that's just for this. Go to MyPay and say, here's my new address. That'll fix that problem.
But what about the last part, after at? I've had Google, and I've had Yahoo, and I've had Web. I've had all of these since about 1980.
Yeah, but MyPay has one, right? MyPay has just one, right?
Well, they want the full Microsoft.com.
Yeah, that's fine. So you give some Sir Hamlin at Microsoft.com or whatever. It's not Microsoft. It's probably live or email or whatever. But Sir Hamlin at whatever. That's the problem is that address is now compromised because this other guy also gave it to him. So you go back to MyPay, create a new address. Go to Gmail and create a new address. Just that says like Sir Hamlin's MyPay address at gmail.com. Whatever it is, you might only use it for this and this only. And then what you do is you go to MyPay and say, I've changed my address. Here's my new email address. People do that all the time. And from now on, you'll be golden. You'll use that new email address. You'll use that social. You can even have Gmail forward it to your Microsoft account so you don't even miss any email. You don't even have to bother checking that account. How about that? You think that would work?
I'll try it.
Thanks for your service. What'd you do in the Air Force?
Oh, I did a lot of things, from security police to loading. I actually learned to fly, but I learned to fly in the Navy before I had a driver's license.
Wow.
So I was landing in people's fields in near Pensacola, Florida. I was landing in people's fields.
I bet they loved that.
because certain sort of watermelons and stuff were disappearing, too, from their yards. So,
oh, I'm sure you had nothing to do with that.
Right, I would never do that.
Hey, Donna, it's really great to talk to you. I think that's the solution, is make a new address and switch it over at MyPay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Take care. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, hour two of the Tech Guy Extravaganza. Our second show of the brand new year. We talk about, of course, on the show, in case you didn't know, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. Actually, we will talk digital photography in about half an hour. Chris Marquardt, our digital photography guru, would join us. I'm trying to think, is it time? I think it might be for our year-end, you know, our month-end wrap-up of great pictures from illustrating the word or concept windy. I think that's what we're going to do. Meanwhile, we're going to get back to the phone calls in just a bit. I like kind of taking some time at the beginning of a new year to look ahead. And, you know, tonight, CES begins. And that's really what the Consumer Electronics Show is all about. CES in Vegas is about looking ahead to products that the consumer electronics industry hopes to sell. That's an important word to underline. Hopes to sell in 2016. So Samsung and Panasonic and Sony and LG will be there with their new TV lineup. Companies, you know, that's, and by the way, to add to those mainline television companies, there'll also be TV companies from China like TCL and Hisense, hoping to make their mark, kind of become the next Samsung. It's kind of an interesting story. LG, for a long time, was Lucky Gold Star. Do you remember that name? Lucky Gold Star, a Korean TV manufacturer. They made cheap, cheap TVs, the kind of TVs you'd find in the back of a drugstore. You know, the little screens, junky stuff. And I think it was the chairman of Samsung, another Korean kind of not such a great TV brand, who said, why is Sony, you know, the name in television? We can do as well. We need to make a concerted effort to make Korean TVs as well known as Japanese TVs. Well, 10 years later, maybe 20, LG and Samsung are the premier name, frankly, in television sets. Sharp, you'd put in there too. That's a Japanese company. Sony used to be, but is slowly, you know, falling off the face of the earth. Pioneer, another Japanese company, same thing. They've stopped making TVs entirely, I think. And all because of the success of Lucky Gold Star and Samsung. Now, Lucky Gold Star doesn't want you to remember Lucky Gold Star, so they call themselves LG, and they pretend it stands for Life is Good. But I'm here to tell you, I got a memory. I'm not going to forget it. They do make excellent TVs and phones and everything else. So they'll be there, and I expect a new line of TVs. And as we talked about before with Scott Wilkinson, in fact, we talked a little bit with him yesterday, and we'll talk probably next week about his CES experience. He's going to be doing a special version of his podcast, the Home Theater Geeks podcast, from CES this week. So look for that later in the week at Twit. That's the podcast network, twit.tv/HTG. But as he's pointed out, we expect to see 4K sets. I'm hoping 4K sets that adhere to a standard. Unfortunately, there are two standards. I don't know why they do this every time. One standard will end up winning, and then you'll want that 4K standard, which means you might want to wait on buying a 4K TV. HDR is going to be big. That's the high dynamic range. That means the black colors are really dark and rich and velvety, and the whites and the light colors are really bright and crisp, and the detail that's available in both the blacks and whites are there, and high dynamic range really does make a difference. Some people have already seen some movies in that, and while it takes a little getting used to in a movie, it really does make a difference on a television. So we'll see those. You'll also see at CES perhaps new computers. It's not all about computers. It's not even about smartphones anymore. In fact, over the last few years, the CES show in Vegas, which starts tonight, has been less and less about smartphones because of Mobile World Congress, which comes up next month, or I guess it's March in Barcelona, and then immediately after it in Berlin, IFA, another big telecommunications show, much like CES. But at both of those shows, that's where you tend to see the new smartphones, everybody but Apple. And Microsoft doesn't really. But Samsung, LG, and all the other brands from Korea and Japan will all announce, I expect, new cell phones, including the Galaxy S7. But don't expect to hear anything or see anything about that at CES this week. Nor will you see any Apple stuff. Apple abandoned CES a long time ago. And so has Microsoft, which kind of surprises me. For years, the highlight of CES was Bill Gates' keynote, kicking it off on Sunday night. He hasn't done that in a couple of years, and Microsoft closed their booth a couple of years ago. That booth, interestingly, taken over by Hisense, the Chinese TV manufacturer I mentioned. Big booth, right across from Intel's booth. Intel will still be there, showing off chips and new form factors. Intel is a funny company because they don't really make PCs, except they kind of do, but they brand them with other companies. I think there are a few Intel devices you can buy, but mostly they create kind of, I guess in automobiles, it's called concept cars. They create concept PCs, and they kind of give the designs to companies like HP and Dell and Lenovo to get them to make those. And I'm sure that, you know, they were the ones that really kind of got the two-in-one convertible market jump started. Intel, that was last year. They've shown these NUCs, these little, they call them next unit of computing, small hockey puck size computers. And last year at CES, they announced the Intel Compute Stick, which was USB key sized PC running Windows 10 that you just plugged into a TV. I expect we'll see more miniaturization from Intel and a lot of other companies. It's funny, Google probably won't have much of a presence at CES. You know who really does have a presence and an increasing presence is the smaller kind of gadget makers from China, Asia. They have their own floor, and there's always interesting stuff. Our gizwiz, Dick DiBartolo, the guy who joins us every Saturday afternoon, haunts those floors at CES. He's already there, and he'll be wandering around. Probably we'll get some stuff from him in our podcast network and on the radio show next week, too. He goes, he looks, intentionally looks for kind of junky, weird, unusual, you know, walking clocks, things like that. No, I'm not joking. It was an alarm clock. I think it was called the walkie. Do you remember this? It was an alarm clock that would go off and then get up and walk away from you so that you couldn't just hit it and turn it off. You had to go find it somewhere in your room. It would hide. It would jump. I sounds like I'm making this up. Sounds like a Disney cartoon. It would jump off your bedside table, roll into a corner, a different place every day. And this was so that you would have to get up and look for it because it'd be making an annoying alarm noise the whole time. I think it was called the walkie. I'm trying to remember. I wonder if they'll be back again at CES. There's clocky. Was the walking clock. Clocky, of course. John, my studio manager, he remembers it. What else will be at CES? Car manufacturers, oddly enough. The Detroit Auto Show is at the same time as CES, but you've seen a number of auto manufacturers kind of back down on the Detroit Auto Show. One company, though, that is always at CES, even though they have to make an appearance both in Detroit and Vegas this week, is Ford. And I am very interested to see what Ford has to say because the rumor is very strong that Google has made a partnership with Ford to build Google's self-driving cars. You probably know, I've talked a lot about it, that Google has, of all the companies out there, really been at the forefront of design and building self-driving cars. They had a little bit of a setback from the state of California a couple of weeks ago when the state said, no, you got to have a licensed autonomous vehicle operator in the car. There has to be a steering wheel, a brake, and a gas pedal. Google didn't want to put those in the autonomous cars. They said they're just distractions. The car drives fine. Anyway, I'm very curious because every time I interviewed the former CEO of Ford, Alan Mulally, he would say, oh, no, we're not. People love to drive. We'll never do a self-driving car. Well, I knew. There had to be a back room, and now we know, or we think we know, we'll find out this week, that Ford and Google may be getting together, and that might bring an autonomous vehicle to your garage sooner than you think. So lots of stuff to look forward to, but let's take your calls. That's what we're really here to do. And, of course, the website, don't forget, everything I talk about will be linked there, including all those news stories, at techguylabs.com. Second show of 2016. Let's get it going here. Hour number two, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. Lots of calls. Thank you, everybody, for hanging on. Kate is next from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Leo.
Thanks for your patience, first of all. I really appreciate it.
Well, your patience, too. Let me quickly say how much I enjoy your whole bit. I love listening.
Aww.
Mad Break Weekly, Windows Weekly. I'm 71. I don't watch TV. I watch tech TV and listen to audiobooks.
I am in love with you, Kate. That is awesome.
I'm in love with you.
Oh, you listen to Windows Weekly? Wow.
Well, yeah, and I want you to know that I am a full blabbermouth.
Me too.
I have told people in doctors' waiting rooms who are playing with their phones and that, told them about...
Oh, bless you.
Yeah, I told them about... And even I live in Michigan, and I've been in Canada, told people in Canada. So,
Bless you. And by the way, even my own mother doesn't listen to Windows Weekly. So you get a prize, a gold star. That's awesome.
Well, you get a gold star in your forehead. How's that?
Thank you.
Let me just throw something out. I'm retired. I've been doing genealogy online for 15 years, been on Ancestry.com for all that time.
Is that any good? Because I see their ads, and it looks like it's kind of cool.
Oh, listen, you will not believe it. It is wonderful.
Are they using the Mormon genealogies?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it's owned by the Mormons, and also there's a free website, Family Search, that is also owned by the Mormons.
Yeah, because part of the Mormon faith is to keep track of genealogies, right? So there's an the Mormon library is huge. It's all these genealogies. You don't have to be Mormon. It's everybody. They're keeping track of everybody. So that makes it a wonderful resource.
It is. It really is. However, Ancestry has gotten a new website. There's two main issues I want to talk to you about or ask you about. One is the software. Now, most of the genealogy software interacts with the net. So, like, I have Family Tree Maker.
Right.
I have my main family tree on the net. But I also have the full family tree on my desktop.
Right.
And I also have an app that I can interact with the network on my iPad.
Okay. This is fairly common. This is how people always seem to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
However.
And there is there's a standard file format so that they all can talk to each. Is it GEDCOM? Something like that they can all talk to each other.
Oh, yeah. GEDCOM is a generic family tree.
Yeah.
However, because there's always been quirks, and there's a lot of us geezers working with this thing, so that doesn't help either.
Well, no, but thank goodness, because I'll tell you what, there's always somebody in the family who keeps track of this stuff, and that person's gold, because nobody else has the time or inclination, but it's great to know. Your family tree is so valuable, I think.
Well, it is. And once you do it and document it, it's there. I feel like I'm sitting in my room at home and traveling the world.
Oh, how fun. Yeah. I have my Aunt Jenny, bless her soul, long gone, but she did that for our family. And if it weren't for Aunt Jenny, I wouldn't know that I go back to the Mayflower and all sorts of stuff. It's just really great. It's only my mother's side, though. I want some stuff on my father's side, too. So I'm thinking of trying this out.
Well, I'd love to see you try out some of the software.
Well, I'm sure it's pretty funky. Family Tree Maker, I used to use that. It was made by Broderbund, but Ancestry's bought it.
I had that version, Broderbund.
Yeah, me too.
It was 7.
Yeah.
Well, it's gone beyond 20.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Broderbund's long gone, and they sold the software off.
But the thing is, Ancestry positioned themselves to be purchased. They changed the entire website.
Wow.
And not only that, their tech support is literally keyword tech support.
That's a shame because it's not a cheap service. You pay a lot of money for this.
Would you believe to get full access, it's $200 for 6 months?
Yeah, that's outrageous. I mean, it's worth it, I guess, if you're real. I mean, this is your thing, and you don't have to go this way. You don't have to go to Salt Lake City, but still, it's a lot of money, and they ought to have some decent tech support if you're spending that much money.
I have belonged to this for close to 15 years. And they have been providing less. And now they do not provide any support. And the thing is, 2015, I'm glad it's gone. Because dealing with the new Ancestry.com website
dealing with Windows 8 and Windows 10 and a broken 3-terabyte hard drive and carbonite living in. It's been a nightmare. And now this new website for Ancestry, and I know you probably don't know exactly, but at least I want to get it into your stuff and have people talk about it. It is absolutely awful because it's when you...
What? Hello? Did we lose you? Yeah. Oh, you dropped out for a moment.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I might have drifted off. I'm not sure. One or the other. Okay, I'm going to have to run because we're almost out of time. But I'm sorry that this is happening. Let me just ask you a couple of questions because maybe we can help this. What operating system, what computer operating system are you using? Do you know?
Yes, I have Windows 10.
Of course you do. You listen to Windows Weekly. Which browser are you using?
Chrome.
Oh, that should be the best. I would expect that to be the most compatible. Have you tried it? You know that Windows 10... They hide it, but it has Internet Explorer on it. Have you tried it with Internet Explorer?
Well, I won't because...
I don't blame you. But it might work better. I don't blame you at all.
If they told me it was designed to work with Windows Explorer and right. Windows 10.
Right. Almost everything is, you know. And that's why I said if you're having compatibility issues, sometimes it's better to try IE. You can try it if you look in your start menu or just even... Hit the start menu and type Internet Explorer, and you can run it. And
however, have your Security Now guy look at this because
it's probably a mess.
I had to enable allow third party.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not private. Look, think about it. Their ancestry.com, privacy is not their middle name. In fact, quite the opposite. I got to run. It's great to talk to you, Kate. I appreciate we are out of time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
And thank you so much.
Oh, I thank you. So basically, it's just that it's not. It's the website stinks, it sounds like.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And love your show.
Oh, bless you. Bless you. Happy Thanksgiving. I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, everybody in your family, if they don't now, will appreciate the work you're doing for the family tree. Because I have books. I have a scroll. It's so nice to see that stuff.
I love the original documents and seeing the handwriting.
Isn't that fun? And the book from Ellis Island or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I really want to do this. Maybe that's what happens. As you get older, I bet you this is what happens. You don't care when you're a kid. But as you get older, you start to realize that you're part of a long chain and that you want to see the links in the chain.
Let me throw quick. I know you're hanging up, but there's a lady that does Google and genealogy and Lisa Louise Cook, COOKE.
Writing it down.
Please look up her website.
I will.
The most creative. I'll hang up on you.
Tell me about your... Did you ever think about doing 23andMe? Do you know what that is?
My daughter did it, and those are real complicated issue. I had 3 DNAs done from Ancestry, and I feel like throwing them out the window.
Oh.
Money.
Yeah.
It's improving.
23andMe is not bad. I did it. You get a cheek swab, but you're right. It's not as good. It's not what you would hope. I mean, I feel like if we could get the full genome, they could say, well, your great grandmother came from the Hebrides and they would know that, but they're not that granular yet.
Well, it would cost you a mint to find
it. It would.
That
you're
out.
Right. It's only $99 for 23andMe.
Lisa Louise Cook has the DNA and all that stuff on her website.
Oh, I'm going to check this out.
Really do. And she writes books, and she is the best presenter. I've seen her in person. I've watched webcasts with her. She's absolute gold.
I bet Aunt Jenny would know who she is. Yeah. Lisa Louise Cook's Genealogy Gems.
Yes.
All right. Yes. I'm checking it out right now.
And she's been podcasting since 2007, and I've been listening to her podcast.
Oh, nice.
And she does webcasts. I watched webcasts with her 5 years ago.
You know, that's a good little business, the genealogy podcast. I should have thought of that. I bet you that's a great business.
And she has free and paid, and you get tons for free. But she also,
That's the way to do it. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, monetize it. She used to live in Pleasanton there.
Oh, yeah, right up the road.
They retired, well, her husband retired, and they're in Texas. But she traveled the whole world. She's just an amazing, amazing lady.
I'm going to check her out. Hey, it was so nice to talk to you, Kate. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Leo.
I'll look for you on Security Now. I can't believe you listen to Security Now. That is such a geeky show.
I know. I like his game.
Oh, bless you, Kate. Take care. Nice to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That guy there, that's Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, joins us every week to talk about taking better pictures with your digital camera. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
We had a good New Year assignment, actually. Windy was the term that we asked people to illustrate. And we got some great pictures at our tech guy group on Flickr. And you picked three of them.
Well, I did pick three of them. We got windy. We also got a couple of windy ones.
Oh, so, could have been windy. Sure. We didn't specify.
There we go. Yeah. And we had a bunch of people send in pictures, and I've made a choice of three again. First one is by RedUp66.
All right.
And it's called Windy, the Plane and the Wind. It's apparently a model airplane. And the first impression is, oh, look, this has been taken with like very shallow depth of field. Feels like, what you get from a camera with a bit of a bigger sensor, like a mirrorless camera or maybe even a DSLR.
But and what's cool is that you can't tell it's a model plane. It could be a full-size plane the way they
The ground kind of gives it away because you see the big...
Well, it could be really big bricks.
Really big bricks and some really, really big weeds growing in between them.
Yeah.
No, but the thing is, I looked around the picture and then all of a sudden it struck me, no. If you look at the right bottom.
What? It's with a Samsung.
Doesn't go out of focus.
It's a Galaxy
in some places.
S5.
So what RedUp66 did here, he or she, it's cheated a little. There's software out there that lets you simulate the shallow depth of field of other pictures, of other cameras. Because if you shoot with a very small sensor, like in this case, a Samsung Galaxy, it's not as easy to get the background out of focus. So you kind of have to help it a bit, you know? And that's what happened in this picture. And but on first look, it's like, whoa, look at the shallow depth of field on it, until you find a few areas where
discriminate. It's okay. Phone shots are fine. In fact, increasingly, photography is going to be about post-processing. It's going to be about software, about what you can do in the computer, right?
Absolutely. And if you have an iPhone, there is an app out there called Tada, TADAA, which actually lets you do that to your picture. So you get to choose which parts are in focus and which parts go out of focus. And it's a really fun thing to play with, actually.
Yeah, I like it. That's pretty. Thank you, RedUp66.
Second one by Mary Ellen.
Mary Ellen.
Ooh. Called Turbulence.
Yeah.
I like this. It's an abstract picture. It shows you squiggly lines, yellow, red, and white, and bluish squiggly lines. Of course, how do you do this kind of a picture? You point the camera at lights, and then you shake the camera or move the camera while you're doing a long exposure. This could, for example, have been maybe from a passenger seat of a driving car. The red and the white kind of makes me think that it's kind of car-related. Hopefully not from the driver's seat, though. But it's turbulence. I mean, that's what the picture shows. Quiggly lines kind of in concert, kind of in parallel. So it's clearly the camera that has moved there. And I kind of like it because it gives me this, I don't know, something to think about, something to guess.
It's a nice use of colors. And, you know, this is an example of where a digital camera is really helpful, because this is the kind of experimental photography that you don't know.
Oh, you
know.
Want to try this over and over and over again until you find one.
Until you get the right jiggle. Right?
Yeah, and you, I mean, this is so simple. You set the camera to time mode S or TV mode. The Canons call it TV, the Nikons and Sony's call it S mode. And you get to choose like half a second or a second of exposure time. And then the camera will kind of jiggle the other parameters, the ISO and the aperture, to kind of make the exposure come out right. And then you can this way just do a 1 second exposure while moving the camera and play with it. And it's just, it's a great ground for experimentation.
Yeah, really fun. Nice one. Thank you, Mary Ellen.
Third one.
Yeah.
James Araluce, Surfing Wind. So this is one of those pictures that it just tells a story. There you see the surf, you see water spray in the air, you see a surfboard and a silhouette of, well, a guy kind of flying through the air. So it really kind of tells you that story. You know what has led up to this shot. There's a guy surfing, and probably or most likely he fell off the board, or he was pushed off the board by a wave. And it's just this, you don't need a lot of information to tell an entire story. So,
but boy, this is a one in a million shot. I mean, this was one where timing is so important, right? And you have to just get this guy in the air. He's flying. But also, well, the lighting is perfect. He's in silhouette, but you've got a gorgeous sunset behind him. This is a special picture. I like this picture a lot.
But this has been shot with a Nikon 4DS with a very long lens, by the way. And the 4DS is kind of on the top of the professional line of the Nikons.
This is a pro, yeah.
So first of all, he pretty much clearly knows what he's doing. But the timing, actually, with these kind of cameras, you don't even have to get the timing right, because all you do is you shoot a burst, and this camera shoots over 10 frames a second. So you get to shoot like 20 frames and then just pick the one that's right. It makes it really easy if you have that kind of a camera.
I'm going to still give him a lot of credit for a truly beautiful shot.
Knows exactly what he's doing.
You can really, and that's another thing that the pros do that I'm trying to learn to do, is pre-visualize. Because he clearly was in the right place when that magic moment happened. You could shoot 10 frames a second, but it has to be in exactly the right place and position. And so he must have thought ahead, pre-visualizing the picture he wanted, position his camera just so, unless it was pure luck.
No, I'm pretty sure he was just waiting and seeing what happens. I mean, that's probably not the only surfer there, so you would have seen something similar from others, and then you can kind of anticipate what's coming up and then just go for it when it happens.
James Araluce is clearly a pro. That is one of the nicest. I love that picture. I'd love a big print of that picture. That's just gorgeous.
Hard to get with a smartphone.
No,
so you really need some equipment for that kind of a shot.
This is where the gear does make a difference. Hey, three wonderful shots. And by the way, not all with, well, that's probably a $6,000 camera. Some of them with just a Galaxy S5. Just shows you could do great stuff. Yeah. And now, Chris, the hardest part of your day, pick a new assignment.
I've been thinking about that for hours. The new assignment is street.
Oh, boy. Now I'm happy.
Well, it could mean a lot of different things.
It is a category of photography, street photography, right?
Well, but it could also be a picture of something on the street, right, or in the street, right, or off a street, yeah?
We're getting a lot of asphalt shots.
Just asphalt. Nothing but asphalt.
Street. Good idea. Here's how this works. This is not a competition. This is not there's no prize at the end of the tunnel here. It's merely an excuse to get you out and shooting, because the more you shoot, the more fun you're going to have with photography. You don't have to use a fancy camera, obviously. Camera phone is just fine. Whatever you've got. We're not even going to tell you what street means. You have to decide for yourself how to illustrate the word, the concept, the idea street. And the way you submit your pictures, your images, is you have to be a Flickr member. That's free. It's a Yahoo photo sharing site, Flickr.com. Once you've joined that, and you probably, if you have a Yahoo account, you've already joined it, go to the Tech Guy group and join that. Renee Silverman's our moderator there. You'll know you're in the right group, because there's thousands of members, over 10,000 members, and thousands of images. There's a big group, a picture of me on it. And there are other tech guy groups, but that's the one. And once a week, for the next 4 weeks, you can submit your best picture illustrating street. Good luck. And we'll pick in a month. Chris will pick three, and we'll talk about them. Chris Marquardt's at discoverthetopfloor.com. That's his site where he has workshops, lots of great images, lots of great information. And he hosts a wonderful podcast for photography called Tips from the Top Floor. Discoverthetopfloor.com. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going back to the phones, and Jeff is on the line from North Carolina. Hello, Jeff.
Leo, good day to you.
Good day, my friend. Thank you for being so patient.
Listen, I'm going to show you how patient I am.
Uh-oh.
Sitting in front of me
is
a 1 terabyte SanDisk SSD.
Yes.
It's been sitting in front of me since I ordered it on Black Friday.
And you're looking at it. You're staring at it.
And I've been waiting since Black Friday for you and have you tell me what to do with it.
So you bought it because it was a good deal?
Unbelievable. Less than $200.
It was. Is it the Evo 850? What did you get?
No. It's SanDisk.
Oh, SanDisk.
It's not terribly well rated, but less than $200. Delivered.
For how many terabytes?
One.
1 terabyte. And it's a solid-state drive.
Yes, sir. Seven millimeters. It should go in my Lenovo.
Is it easy to open your Lenovo and pop in a new drive?
Should be. I haven't done it, but yes, it should be.
How much? $200?
Under.
That's a good deal.
Yeah, it was an Amazon. No, did I? Oh, it was Newegg. And then Visa had some kind of a deal. Actually, it was $175 delivered with...
Do you know how smart the chat room is? Eric Duckman said, oh, yeah, the SanDisk 960 gigabyte, $199 at Newegg. Before you mentioned it, he knew which one you got.
So, my question is this. I have...
By the way, this is the problem with Black Friday. You buy stuff, you don't know what you're going to do with it.
No, I know what I'm going to do with it, but I don't know how. That's why I'm holding onto it to talk to you.
Oh, good. What do you want to do with it?
So, I have a 500 gigabyte spinning drive that's full.
In your Lenovo. All right.
Lenovo. Yeah. It's Windows 8. I've been waiting to do this. I haven't upgraded yet. So, the question is, what do I do... How do I get this thing set up before I put it in?
Yeah, because basically what you want to do is clone the old drive to the new drive.
Except that I also eventually want a fresh install.
Oh, well, that makes it a lot easier.
Okay.
So what you're going to do is take the old drive out. You haven't done the upgrade, right?
I haven't. The
Windows 10 upgrade. All right. The issue is going to be activation. So you can put the new drive in right now and install Windows on it. If you're lucky, did you get a disk with a Lenovo or is it a, can you make recovery disks with a Lenovo?
I think I made a recovery flash drive, I think.
See if you can find it. If you can't, make a new one.
Okay.
That's the easiest because you'll put the new drive in and you'll just install Windows on it. The old drive now is just sitting there, this bare drive, looking lonely and naked. If you want to keep it around for a while, just buy an enclosure for it.
Yeah, that's not my concern. My concern is just exactly, so you're telling me, turn off the computer, take out the drive, throw in the new drive, put in the USB.
And restore.
And somehow I'll be able to recover Windows onto the new drive.
Yeah, you'll restore it, yeah.
Just like that.
That's what that key is for.
Okay.
If you got it. And if not, sometimes you can make another one. Used to be they'd only let you do this once, which was, in my mind, incredibly stupid.
But I remember in the past I had that problem. So if I can't make another one, and if I don't find it, then what?
Yeah. We need to get a copy of Windows somehow.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because you can't install Windows without it. And, look while you got it running now. Look and see if you can create recovery media. If you can't...
Yes.
You could clone the existing drive. It probably has a recovery partition. That's where the...
It does.
Yeah, that's where the fresh install is.
It does.
I wonder if there's a way... You want a clean install. Somebody's saying, why not just image the old drive? And you could do that, but we won't get a clean install. What we want is a clean install.
So what happens if I image the drive, put the drive in?
And you could do a recovery then, yeah. Restore the image and then do a recovery. There is a slight chance, very unlikely, that Microsoft won't activate the new install saying, oh, this is a new computer.
Right.
But changing the disk, almost, I've never heard of that doing that. You have to change more than one component for that to happen.
Okay.
So you shouldn't have an issue. One thing you could do, I got a good one. Are you going to go to Windows 10?
Yes.
All right, this is the thing to do. Upgrade the existing system to Windows 10 now.
Okay.
What will happen is Microsoft, the Windows 10, the free Windows 10 upgrade you get is tied to that Lenovo. Microsoft actually looks at the BIOS, gets a unique key, and says, okay, good. This Lenovo is okay to use Windows 10. Now you download the media creation tool from Microsoft. It's the ISO. It's basically the recovery disk. It's free download from Microsoft. You put that on a USB. Now that's a clean install of Windows 10. You can now take out the old drive, put in the new drive, restore it from that Windows 10 key. Microsoft will activate it because it'll say, oh, yeah, this is the same computer. This computer is a Windows 10 computer. You've got a clean install of Windows 10, and you have your old drive, which you can now use as an external drive for backup purposes or to get your data off of. You just need an external enclosure to make that be a USB drive.
Okay. Can I take 1 second and read it back to you to make sure I got it?
Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to put it on the show notes at techguylabs.com.
Okay.
But you get the gist of it. What we're going to do, what we're basically going to do is do the upgrade to the old drive,
right,
to Windows 10, and make sure it gets activated, which it should happen within a minute or two. As soon as it's activated, that means you have now registered Windows 10 with that Lenovo. So you can do anything you want. You could change the hard drive and reinstall Windows 10. It'll call the activation server, say, hey, this is Lenovo. I'm ready to, would you act? And it'll activate it because it says, well, what's your magic number? Here's the magic number. Oh, yeah, we know you. The key to understand this is that the Windows 10 is associated with that computer once you activate it, and it's based on information it gathers from the BIOS.
Got it. Okie dokie. Okay. I hope this will be the last time I have to call you this year.
If not, I'm in deep trouble. But we will put in the show notes. And then if you want more information on this process, my buddy Paul Thurrott, he's the one I'm quoting here, basically. He writes a wonderful blog about Windows, Thurrott, Thurrott.com. And just look on Thurrott.com for clean install. He walks you through the process.
Perfect. Thanks
okay.
for your help.
You're welcome. And the key to understanding this is that Microsoft's doing something different now with its Windows installs. They're associating them directly to the hardware. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and Steve in Woodland Hills, California. Hi, Steve.
Leo, you are the man. How the heck are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy past Black Friday. I've been listening to you for years. I've been wanting to talk to you for years, and this is the first time I got the opportunity to call you.
Well, I'm glad you did. You got 2 minutes. What can I do?
Very good. I purchased 4 to 5 years ago a Lenovo Win 7 PC.
Uh-huh.
It has an Intel Core i5 2430 MCPP at 2.4.
You don't have to read me the stats. What's going on?
I've got the Tablica virus.
Fortunately, that's not a bad virus. It's what we call a browser hijacker. So you're getting ads, right, in your search results?
Yes. When I go online, it prevents me from immediately going into the HTMLs, and I get these pop-ups.
Yeah.
And if I don't close the pop-up windows within like a second or two, I get a verbal notice.
You can remove it. Basically, you want to uninstall something called VPlay. It's in your ad remove programs, and then remove Tablica from your homepage. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tablica. This is a virus. It's called a browser hijacker that isn't really a virus. It's more like you probably, what I'm guessing is you installed some software and the installer installed it, like some free downloads.
What happened was we were going on to a webinar, and we clicked the wrong button for the webinar, and that's when we got the
device. God, I hate that. So it's not technically a virus because you can uninstall it, but they don't make it easy to uninstall. In fact, you could just Google Tablica uninstall, and you'd see the removal stuff. And one of the ways they make it hard is they don't call it Tablica in the installer. They call it's Vplay, I think. But let me see. Maybe it's not Vplay.
And I'm going to tell you while you're searching. I have my IT guy because I have my IT guy.
Yeah.
He tried to help me, and he said my computer had a nasty reaction. And then I've tried to go into uninstall programs, and I didn't have a nasty reaction.
I'm actually looking deeper, and I'll have to probably modify my answer because it turns out it is a Windows service, which is a sneakier way of installing than just installing an app. So you're going to have to delete the Windows service. Did you see an ad remove programs, anything called Tablica?
Actually, no. I saw nothing called
Tablica. Yeah. It's really a shame because they're basically, they're trying to not be a virus. So to technically not be a virus, you have to be uninstallable, right? But instead of making it easy to uninstall, they're really obscuring what they've done. And it's kind of nasty. But it is removable. It's not technically a virus. So you can... So here's your choices. You can look through, Google Tablica removal. And you'll see there's even a YouTube video that walks you through it. And in most cases, that's sufficient. But here's the more complete answer, which is as soon as your system's compromised, if this is the true Tablica, it's probably okay. But as soon as your system's compromised, it's kind of in an unknown state now. We don't know what else is going on. I think you're safe to just remove it using I wouldn't get a removal tool. I would follow the manual instructions for removing it. But I think you're probably going to be all right. If you still notice weird search results or advertisements that you didn't expect, then what you might end up having to do, oh my God, they modify the registry, it looks like.
I can tell you this. When we went for applying for the webinar and I went to uninstall, I looked at the dates when all of those programs showed up, and I did my best to uninstall everything that was added from the
Smart.
Date on. But I still got the virus. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Because it also puts stuff in the registry, and it starts up Windows services. Those don't get uninstalled through the uninstaller. You can remove it. There's ways to remove it. Malware Bytes will probably remove it. There are malware uninstall tools. The problem is, the way I would normally do it is wiping the hard drive and starting over, because you don't know exactly what's been modified. I'm just looking at Tablica.
I've done everything I can to avoid starting over, to avoid wiping out everything.
But it's still there, right?
Yes, you were my last hope before wiping everything out.
I almost always say it's best to wipe everything out. I'm looking at, good Lord, the removal. This thing really does. It's not a virus, but it really gets all over you. It's really spewed all over you. And unless you're really comfortable using the Revo uninstaller and Malware Bytes and CCleaner. I mean, there's just so much crud this thing installs. They're trying to make it hard for you to uninstall it.
Oh, I think they've succeeded in making it hard for me, sir.
Well, I'll tell you what I would do for me. I would erase your hard drive and start over.
All right. Fair enough.
I'm sorry.
No. I totally appreciate your advice. I've been waiting to call you like for 2 or 3 years to get something, and there you have it. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
I'm sorry to have such bad news. Oh, Lord. But, you know, that really is annoying because they know that you're going to accidentally click that button. They don't make it obvious that you're downloading something else.
That's right.
So I would contact this webinar guys and say, dudes, this is unconscionable. You know,
it was the state of California, by the way. It was
what?
The state of California, right? But yes.
Wow. What's the URL? Do you know? Do you remember?
No, I don't remember. But I can. Let's just say I don't remember. I don't remember.
That the state of California shouldn't be doing that. That's that's really bad. Yeah, but they, you know, so probably the webinar was saying, okay, you're going to need this special conference software, and they sent you to a site where the conference software is, and it's the conference software that's trying to make a little on the side by having some ads, but those ads are tricking you into clicking download. You don't look real carefully, see the download button, you click it, and oh, whoops, now you got Taplica on you.
Yeah, this was a state-certified, guaranteed webinar for my specific injury.
Yeah, really, really, really sorry. That sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be safe, back up your data. You know, don't erase your drive until you back up your data, and do a full system restore. And really, that's the best thing to do. Here's the good news. Everything will run better from now, you know, for a while now.
I totally appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Hey, my pleasure. Glad you called, Steve. Take care. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, hour 3 of the Tech Guy Show. Talking tech, computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, TV sets, self-driving vehicles. TV is an interesting, you know, nowadays TV is a tech topic, isn't it? I mean, not the shows, not reviewing the shows, but who makes the shows, where you see the shows, how you get TV. That is going to be, this is going to, I say this every year. I predict, I really believe it this year. This will be the year that TV, as we know it, starts to unravel and TV on the internet starts to take off. It already is, really. I mean, who doesn't at this point have a $8, is that what it is still? Maybe they raise the rates a little bit, $9 Netflix subscription. Everybody's got Netflix, right? And how many of you still get the DVD? Some. But more than 3/4 of Netflix business now is just streaming, no DVD at all. Even though there's not as many movies by any means, I think some of this is because of the Netflix originals. They're now making their own TV shows, and the only place you can watch them is on Netflix, and they're good. And people are subscribing. They figure, well, $8, I get House of Cards and all the other TV shows. That's a good, I think Netflix is a good deal. And then Amazon Prime, right? They're doing it too. Man, Amazon's launching shows to beat the band. Season 2 of Transparent just came out. And don't you love the fact that the whole season comes out at once? My wife and I kind of fell in love with Fargo, the TV show Fargo. And we had come to it late, so we were able to watch. We bought it on iTunes. And we were able to watch the first season, like, in 1 week. 10 episodes, boom, 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 like that. 10 hours in 1 week. Then we said, this is great. But the second season, you know, was just starting, so we had to wait a week between shows. It just killed the fun. Don't you like binge watching? Isn't that the... I just love it. Apple, by the way, has really wanted to kind of start bringing live TV to you via their Apple TV. Apple TV, in my opinion, is it's a good device, but it's not a must-have device. It's a must-have only if you buy stuff on iTunes. And of late, maybe there's some stuff that you need, like, for instance, the exclusive Taylor Swift, but you had to have Apple Music, too. So you have to have Apple Music, you have to have an Apple TV, and then you can watch Taylor Swift's concert starting last week. You could watch her concert only on Apple. They're going to do more of that. They haven't done any original productions yet. But they have done deals with I think, CBS now. You can watch CBS, including, in many markets, your live local station. So they want to move in that direction where you don't need a cable subscription. You need a data subscription, you know, high-speed internet and an Apple TV. Or my favorite, the Roku. I like Roku a little better. CBS is also on Roku. That gives you everything except Apple TV. It gives you Amazon, which I think is important. Gives you Netflix, lots of other channels. More, and all of these boxes really are intended to take your television set and put it on the internet, you know, so that you can get your shows from the internet. And increasingly, I think that your television is not going to come from antennas or come from cable or come from satellite, but is going to come over on the internet. And I wonder, maybe we can talk about this, if you could get everything you wanted over the internet, even if it weren't cheaper, maybe it's the same or maybe even a little more, but you pay a la carte. You buy HBO from HBO instead of from your cable company. You buy CBS from CBS itself instead of your cable company. If you could do that and you just got what you wanted, nothing more, I think that would be a preferable way. As long as you have enough internet and bandwidth caps don't kill you. That's one way. Comcast, my cable provider, is fighting this, by the way, is by putting on bandwidth caps because they want to preserve their television business. That's a high profit business. Things are changing. They're changing. We're getting closer and closer. And you know, here, you know, this show is heard, of course, in Hollywood on the great KFI, big Los Angeles station. I know a lot of Hollywood types listen, and increasingly, tell me if I'm wrong, but the creatives are interested in, instead of going to the networks or even going to HBO and Showtime with their new ideas, going to Amazon or Netflix or App. I think Apple's going to get in this business. Or Google, and the same amount of money, maybe more money, is there. My friend Dana Brunetti, who's a producer, he works at Trigger Street. He produced Captain Phillips and a lot of great movies. He did House of Cards, and he told me the story of how they'd this close to a deal already with one of the big cable networks. I'm guessing, he didn't tell me, but I'm guessing something like HBO. And a phone call, he's ready to sign the next day, and the phone call comes in at night, and it's Netflix saying, hey, we'll give you $100 million. Complete creative control, and you can release the entire season in one fell swoop, the whole season all at once. And Dana said, yes, yes. He called Kevin Spacey, the star of the show, and his partner, and said, Kevin, what do you think? Spacey said, yeah. And Dana told me something that kind of surprised me, and maybe you creatives who are listening can tell me if this is... He said one of the most appealing things was... Wasn't the money. Sure, creative control, but HBO or whoever would have given him that. It was the idea that all the episodes would come out at once. He liked that idea. And I guess Spacey liked that idea. He liked the idea that people could binge watch it. Maybe that's because now more and more of Hollywood watches that way and understands the wonderful experience. It is kind of counterintuitive because there are advantages to stringing something out. You get more social media attention. There's more conversation. You know, when Mad Men was wrapping up its season last year, five or six magazines, same number of websites, were all writing after every episode, what happened in this episode? What does it portend for the future? There was a lot of time. There's a week in between episodes for people to get all excited and get the promotion machine going. You lose that when you release it all at once. Maybe that's not that valuable. I don't know. And maybe it's just purely a creative decision. They just like the idea that, and that certainly, thank you, Dana. Thank you, Kevin, because I binge watched House of Cards every season, the whole thing, as fast as we could. Sometimes we watch two or three episodes a night. It's awesome. How do you watch? This won't be the year that the disc dies out, but we're getting close. And I've been talking about this for years. Maybe I was a little ahead of the curve. I know videophiles love Blu-ray discs. There is a new disc format. We're going to see it at CES probably tonight. For Ultra HD 4K video, which would, you know, you have the right TV and the right setup, it's going to look amazing. And nobody disagrees that disc is better. It's the best way to see high def or even ultra high def video. Better even than on the air, which is the next best method, and a lot better than streaming, even 4K streaming, because you have to compress it so much for streaming that you can lose some quality. And yet the convenience of streaming just, in my mind, and I think in the mind of America, really outweighs the quality of video. We've seen this happen once before. The convenience of MP3s, even though they were lower quality, outweighed that lower quality. And people stopped buying CDs. I know a few of you still buy CDs. Many of you still buy DVDs. But the majority of people now buy their music on iTunes. They never have a physical disc. And I'm guessing people are not buying DVDs much anymore, except the hardcore video files. 2016 is the year, you know, streaming and cable cutting, cord cutting, they call it, where they get rid of the cable company. It's going to be the year of that, I think. It may even be the year where it switches, where more people watch on the internet than watch on cable or broadcast. That will be the year. Maybe it's this year. All right, enough of me jawboning. Back to the phones we go. We got a lot of great callers. And don't forget, I should mention the website. If you hear something on this show and you want to, you don't have to write it down. You want to, what did Leo say? It's all at the website, techguylabs.com, including audio and video after the fact, and your comments, too, and I'd appreciate it if you'd help me out. Put your comments in there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your call's next. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We are talking high tech for the new year. Happy New Year, everybody. Let's move on to Bob in Santa Barbara. Hi, Bob. Oh, my gosh. Run to the phone, Bob. I've only been keeping them on hold for like an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah, well, I appreciate getting to talk to you. I want to get a Chrome bit for $85.
Yeah.
And make my 60-inch TV a Chromebook.
Isn't this a great idea?
Yes. I want to use it as like a second computer when I'm sitting on a couch and I don't want to sit up and work.
Yeah.
And
if you think about web TV, which costs a lot of money and have a monthly subscription, we've come so far. This little, it looks like a USB key with an HDMI port. You plug it into your TV, and now it's a Chromebook.
Absolutely. But I need a keyboard and mouse.
Yeah.
And that would double the cost if I had to. I mean, it's $85.
I know. It'd be cheaper to get a Chromebook, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
If you shop around, you can get pretty cheap. And by the way, they're just as good. Bluetooth keyboards and mouse. Look for Anker brand. Let me just check on Amazon and see how much they charge.
But I was wondering if you could, if you could use like your iMac key.
Yeah, if you have any Bluetooth keyboard, you could use your iMac, yeah.
Or can the iPad with an app turn into a
Bluetooth? No, unfortunately not. Not an iPad. You need a wireless keyboard of some kind. Here you go, $19.99 for a wireless Bluetooth keyboard and mouse. Let me see if it's Bluetooth. That would be the only issue. It needs to be Bluetooth. But that's cheap, $20.
Yeah, that I would do.
Yeah, so you don't need to buy the Apple brand. You know, these guys overcharge. I don't know. Oh, yeah, see, this is not the one you want. It's not Bluetooth, so we're going to keep looking here. But my point being that these are not that expensive. Let me put Bluetooth in here and see if... Okay,
but some of these are only targeted to certain operating systems.
No, if it's...
I don't know.
Bluetooth is Bluetooth.
Is it?
Yeah. So if it's a... Because the way Bluetooth works is you have a profile, it's called. And Bluetooth has profiles for wireless headsets. It has profiles for headphones. It has a variety of different profiles. The human interface device profiles work with all Bluetooth mice and keyboards alike. So here's one that's $25 for a wireless keyboard from Anker. I like Anker brand. They're inexpensive, but they're good. They're decent quality. I'm going to try to find. What I'd love to find is here's a $16 Bluetooth keyboard. Now, they say four iPad Air, two iPad Mini, Galaxy Tab. Doesn't matter. Bluetooth's Bluetooth.
Can you see those on Amazon?
Yep. I'm seeing it on Amazon right now. The Anker Bluetooth. Search for Bluetooth keyboards. But this one's $15.99 for the keyboard. A Bluetooth mouse, maybe $5. So you should. The problem is if you go to Apple, you'll see it's $150.
Right.
Because it's beautiful brushed aluminum. And it's got an Apple logo on it. That's the most expensive part of the whole thing.
Yeah, if I get something like this for $100, I can sit down and my couch
the whole
and
thing.
Spend the whole evening there without having to go to my desktop. Yeah.
Now, the thing, a couple of things to understand, the Chrome bits are not, you know, they're small, so they don't have a super fast processor. They don't have a lot of RAM. But I think they're, I mean, Chrome OS doesn't take a lot of juice. And I think that, you know, they're designed to fit to go on your screen. Remember, your screen, even though it's a beautiful big display for TV, is not as high resolution as most computer screens, but you're sitting fairly decent distance from it.
I also heard you can change the resolution to make the.
Well, it can only be as high. Legal. Yeah, it can only be as good as the resolution of the display. Obviously, you can't get better than that. So the Chrome bit that Asus sells is actually pretty decent. It's 16 gigs of storage, 2 gigs of memory. It has 802.11 Wi-Fi A and C, Bluetooth 4. It has USB ports too, which is kind of cool. So you could plug in a USB keyboard and mouse if you wanted to, or a USB hub. But you want it wireless, so I think that's the best way to go.
What is the other wireless, the 1122 byte? I mean, what do you?
Well, you need to have Wi-Fi. You do have internet access in your house, right?
Yeah.
You need to have Wi-Fi. So the more modern standard is 802.11 AC. It's a little faster, but it'll work with any Wi-Fi access point. It'll be plenty fast enough.
Okay, but that 802.11.IC spec is just so that you can get on your
Wi-Fi router.
Wi-Fi router. Okay,
yeah, it has to have that. I think these are great. I haven't picked one up yet, but I'm a big fan of Chrome OS. Frankly, it'd be a more secure way to do your banking than your laptop.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's a great idea.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yeah, just Bob, just
your program all the time.
And oh, bless
the first
you.
Time I got through.
Yay! Absolutely great. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, come to think of it, because it has a USB port, I suppose the Anker keyboard and mouse that have a special Anker. No, you'd have to have a driver. No, you want to get the standard Bluetooth keyboard and mouse. Standard keyboard and mouse. Yep. Moving along. Let's see who's next. Doug, also in Santa Barbara. Hi, Doug. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Doug.
Hey, I'm here. You picked up.
Yay. I'm glad you didn't fall asleep. I actually picked up once, and there was a woman on the other line snoring. I'm not going to name any names, Dr. Mom, but she was snoring. I guess I just took too long.
Yeah.
And she went out. So what can I do for you?
Well, I'm a senior, fixed income. I live in an RV, and I'm looking for a 12-volt television set, like 20 to 24-inch. I'm just going to start out with it. Just hook up an HD antenna to it.
Yeah. They used to make these for disasters, right? So you'd keep it in the fallout shelter or in the basement. And if if the power went out, you could use your car battery to power the thing. I wonder if they still make them. Let me see. Yeah, there's a place called the 12-volt store.
Oh.
My12voltstore.com that's having a sale on TV. Now, they're not going to be giant, right? Because it's got to run, these tend to be like 13-inch and so forth, but they also are very expensive, under $200. Mm-hmm. They have LED LCDs that are good. Jensen, Skyworth, Majestic, big names.
Yeah, that's my next question. How do you know what
name
to buy?
Jensen is the only name I recognize. They make car stereo systems. I presume it's the same Jensen. I don't recognize the other names, so yeah. I just don't know. My suspicion is they're probably all fine. I wish you could see before you buy them.
Mm-hmm.
But
are some of them HD pictures?
At that size, it probably doesn't much matter. But yes, indeed, they're HD TV. Probably 720p, not 1080p. But that's fine. Here's a supersonic 15-inch. So it's kind of like your computer display, right? It's a widescreen LED, 16x9, $181. And so I think for emergencies or for an RV, this is a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My piggyback question is, on a regular name brand...
Hold on just a second. I got to take a break, but we'll come back. Piggyback question. Go ahead now. I'm sorry.
Yeah. On a regular TV that you would buy, say at Costco, wherever, doesn't matter. They come with a transformer, right, from AC, the wall AC to a transformer and into the TV set now.
Yeah, usually that transformer's inside the TV.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, oh.
You go, oh, you're thinking of taking a regular TV, replacing the transformer with an inverter.
Well, not that. Yeah, so it'll run off whatever they run off.
Right.
12 volts.
Yeah, you probably could do that. I would bet you some TVs have external transformers. I don't know of any. My Samsung, this was an attempt to make them upgradable, has a lot of the electronics outside the TV. What are you pointing at?
These TVs.
But see, he wants a big, wants a real nice TV. The small ones tend to have, because they don't have much room, they tend to have the transformers outside.
Outside.
But the big ones, they put them inside.
And on the outside, it'll tell what it runs on,
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so you may, if you can always get an inverter. I mean.
Yeah, I have one already.
Yeah. So you can, truthfully, you could run any kind of TV if you wanted to.
Yeah.
As long as you're not draining, you got enough juice in the battery.
Right, sure.
Yeah.
Now, what about, what's the cost of a dish satellite system?
They have them for RVs, which probably means they're going to be more expensive. Normally, the equipment's only a few hundred bucks, but the problem with RV is you're moving, so you can't use it till you park. You don't want to get the one that you can use while you're driving, because those have to have don't even consider it. They do have them. They have to aim continuously, right? That's not a good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, they make them, and I'm sure they're hideously expensive, and I don't know how well they would work. But normally what you do is you park, and then you aim the antenna, and you get back inside, and you watch TV.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be that expensive. You could even get a mount that allows you to do that, so you could just use the regular one. But you're going to want to fold it down while you're driving anyway. You're not going to want to have it sitting up there to blow right off.
Yeah. But there's like a $50 a month fee for that, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a month. You got to subscribe. But if you go to Dish and look at their RV, it's at Dish. I think it's Dish.com. Look at their RV setups. I don't think they're horribly expensive. How long are you going to be on the road?
Well, I live here. I live in the RV permanently.
Oh, you're already there. Okay.
Yeah.
So you want to get a nice setup. I don't blame you.
Yeah. But for starters, I'm just going to go with an HD antenna.
Yeah, I think that's, the truth is, as long as you're near metro areas, that's going to be the best quality signal.
Yeah, I think I can get quite a few channels here.
Yeah, and it's free.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, my next question, I heard there's a $35 to $50, I don't know if it's a laptop or a tab or something that just goes and uses, it's just for surfing on the internet. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, there are a lot of tablets out there. $50, you're not going to get much. The cheapest one that's decent is the Amazon Kindle. I guess it is the Fire, isn't it? The Kindle Fire. And which one's the $50 one? It's just a 7-inch Fire. It's not very big. But at Amazon, in fact, the Black Friday special was $35. It was really cheap. That's the only one I'd get under $100 is the Amazon. And the only reason I'd get that one is because effectively they're subsidizing it because you're going to be buying Amazon content. So they don't mind losing money on that. If you bought something like a Pantech, gas stations sell them, but that's going to be a crappy tablet. You really aren't going to want that one. Right. The Amazon ain't bad for the price. It's amazing.
Okay. All right.
All right.
My last question. How bad is it to be holding my cell phone up to my ear all the time?
Don't worry about it. I do it all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. There's no evidence that it's – there's no evidence at all. The only – what you hear is people like the World Health Organization saying, well, in case it's – don't do it. But they don't know. There's no – and every study has said there's no evidence.
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry about it. We're going to die from something else long before we die from cell phone radiation.
I just didn't want to lose any more brain cells.
I know. You're losing them every minute.
Yeah. All right, Leo.
Thanks. Take care, Doug. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of people who talk a lot about how dangerous it is, but there has yet to be any evidence that shows that it's dangerous. And if there is evidence, I'll let you know. As soon as there's evidence, I'll let you know. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We are answering computer and technology questions, and we are going to go to Chuck in Tennessee. Hello, Chuck.
Oh, howdy.
Howdy.
Let me put my brain back in here.
Oh, I remember you, Chuck. We've talked before, haven't we?
Oh, yeah, a couple times.
Are you the old geek?
I'm old. I'm old. You're young.
No, I'm not young. But if you're older than me, you're old.
I'm the age of your mother.
Oh, nice to talk to you. Welcome to the show, Chuck. What can I do for you?
Well, I came close to having an emergency, but I've gotten over it. So now I've got some questions about. Let me start from the beginning.
Okay.
I was in the middle of a project when I started getting hard drive problems.
Oy.
So I did an emergency purchase of a new Windows 7 computer from Dell.
Good.
So, I don't go off half cocked when it's important. So, anyway, it came Windows, it was advertised as Windows 7 ready.
Yeah.
Now, when I finished with this project, I...
Windows 7 or Windows 10?
Windows 7. It was Windows 10 ready.
Okay, yeah, because being Windows 7 ready nowadays really isn't saying a whole lot. That's like you and me. Yeah, we're Windows 7 ready.
Yeah, well, my brain is not working too fast tonight.
No, I'm sorry. I kept you on hold for a long time. So it's Windows 10 ready.
Right.
Yep.
And it's now... my old Windows 7 machine was listed as kept wanting me to upgrade to 10.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I understand. I've got a year to do that.
You do. Till July 29th, 2016. Uh-huh. You have another 7 months.
Is there a time limit on updating this one I just bought?
Yeah, same thing.
It comes with a DVD that says already installed on your computer.
But what's already installed is what, 8 or 10?
Well, I guess it has to be. It doesn't say. It says 10.
Oh. No, that's different. So the deal was Microsoft said for 1 year, anybody running Windows 7 or 8 or 8.1 uh-huh. can get a free upgrade to Windows 10 for 1 year from July 29th, 2015. But that was for people who are running Windows 7 or 8. If you bought a new computer that may be running 8, but see, does it come with Windows 10 or it's ready to run Windows 10? There's a difference.
The DVD says already installed on your computer.
And the DVD is a Windows 10?
It's a DVD. It's for Windows 10.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Operating system.
No, it sounds like you're good.
I think maybe I got it better that way because they gave me a DVD with it, which would
I know.
Get with the other one.
They don't do that anymore.
So
here's one way to find it. And what the operating system it's running right now, do you know?
That's Windows 7.
So you bought a Windows 7 PC. It said it's ready for Windows 10.
Right.
And you believe that DVD they sent you is a Windows 10 install disk.
That's what it says, Windows 10 Pro, 64-bit.
You sure it's a 10?
It's already installed on your computer. I'm sitting here looking at it right now.
Well, do you want to do the upgrade now, or you want to wait?
I'm going to wait as long as possible.
Yeah.
I've got Windows 10 on my Surface Pro, but I don't particularly like it. And if I real work, really, I'd like to go back to XP.
You're not alone. Well, I think 7, I would stick with 7. So I understand what your question is. Is this going to time out? And the problem is, and, you know, it's really unfortunate, you have to carefully parse what they're saying. Windows 10 ready does not mean you get Windows 10. It merely means it's compatible.
Right.
So
that's why I called you. I'm reading what's on this DVD.
Yeah. There is no, as to my knowledge, Windows 10 DVD, although a third party like the manufacturer of the computer could, I guess, make one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe there is a Windows 10 DVD.
I've just had this computer 2 weeks, but I haven't.
Who made the, is it, did you say a Dell?
It's a Dell.
I would ask them.
I'm going to do that, but I thought it's an opportunity to discuss it with you.
Yeah.
So, I was looking for an excuse.
People have been bit before by this Windows, well, in the old days it was Windows 7 ready. You kind of thought, oh, that means I'm going to get Windows 7 when it comes out. No, it just means it can. You still have to buy it. So it you have to kind of parse carefully what they're saying, and only Dell knows exactly what that means. If there really is a Windows 10 disk in there, then that should be good any time.
And that was what I was thinking, but, you know, I'm with you. I don't really trust what they tell me.
No, I think you'd be well advised before July 29th to call them and just say, what did I get?
Okay.
What did I get here? I know I'm running Windows 7.
Well, as old as I am, I'm just soon to stick with Windows 7.
You might want to. And my best guess is that after July 29th, you will not be able to upgrade for free. That Windows 10 disk is only good till July 29th.
Well,
so you have till then to decide.
Well, yeah. So what I'm going to do with the old computer with the flaky hard drive is to put a new hard drive in it and put XP back on it so it'll handle all the software I can't use on my Windows 7.
All right, but just don't put that machine on the internet because Windows XP is just...
Oh, I know. I've got an old laptop that I use when I have to go back to XP.
Smart.
But it's not on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that by July 29th, in 8 months, we'll have, or 7 months, we'll have some good, it's closer to eight, we'll have some good idea of whether Windows 10 is worth upgrading. It's got to be more stable. You know, really, this is kind of how Microsoft works anyway. The first release of any version of Windows has issues. Windows 10 maybe more than normally, but they always do. And then they patch it and fix it and pound on it. And it's by the time, you know, a year or two goes by, usually it's better. XP is a very good example. Really, the first version of XP was not great. It wasn't until Service Pack 2, remember, that Windows XP became the nice, solid operating system you've come to love. And I think 7, you could say the same thing. And it's absolutely true, we know, for Windows 10. It's gotten better. Microsoft says we're going to just continually improve it. But it ain't done. They literally say it will never be done. So I think wait as long as you can until you feel like you need it. And my guess is you don't have the right to upgrade it forever just for that 1 year. Richard on the line from West LA. Hey, Richard, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk with you as usual.
Nice to talk to you.
I bought a 2013 Nexus, liked it a great deal. And I think you used to say that there were five full recharges for the battery, which can't be replaced, of course.
Right.
I was very careful about not
five,
using...
500, by the way.
Sorry?
500.
I'm sorry, you're right, of course.
Five would be kind of, you know, that's not so good.
That would be kind of cool, right?
In most cases, you get about 500 discharge-recharge cycles on a lithium-ion battery. It varies depending on the battery, but I think that Nexus, that's about right.
I think you said it was full recharges, though, right?
Yeah, they don't count fractional. So if you discharge it halfway and recharge it, that's one half.
Okay, well, I barely used more than 3 or 4 minutes on the battery at any one time. I used to make sure.
But it adds up, like 3 minutes down, 3 minutes up, that's 3 minutes, and then another 3 minutes, and another 3 minutes. So it adds up. It's cumulative.
The battery went down at one point, and I don't know why this happened because I was pretty careful, to about 26%.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to recharge it since.
Oh, dear.
Is it possible batteries like that wear out entirely?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it too often?
Well, it's not that old, but yeah. So you kept it plugged in all the time?
Almost every time. Yeah. Once in a while, you know, I would move from one room to another and it would be on batteries, but I would plug it in immediately.
Yeah.
I was very careful because I heard what you said.
Generally speaking, but it's still always going down and up, down and up, down and up. So I suspect it's worn out. I mean, it's telling you it is.
I ended up buying, by the way, a couple of weeks ago now, the Nook, the 7-inch Nook.
Yeah?
Which seems to work pretty well, although I'm concerned again about the battery thing, whether I should...
Well, that one, you're never going to get a replacement because they don't sell them anymore. So, that you know, a lot of times these tablets, they're basically throwaways. They don't expect you to fix them. Hey, we're out of time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, where'd you get the Nook?
Barnes & Noble.
Barnes & Noble's still selling them, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty cheap, and I wanted a replacement because the other one was almost useless.
You know, that's what Steve Gibson does, because he knows everything goes away. He'll buy 7 or 8 and put them in the fridge.
Good idea.
And the idea is it slows down the inevitable breakdown of that battery.
Now, tell me, do you think I should use the same system of barely using it on batteries and trying to keep it charged?
No, I wouldn't worry about it. Because what happens with these chargers is they're still going down and up, down and up, down and up.
Ah, I see.
It's not running. Well, unfortunately, it's not running off the mains. It's not running off the electrical. It's still running off the batteries. The battery's getting discharged and recharged. And even though it's doing it in micro units, it might be doing it so much that it ends up wearing it out anyway.
Yeah, I get you. All righty. Well, I think you're right about the throwaway thing. You know, if it lasts me a couple of years,
shame. I dread the landfill. You know, problems we're going to have. But that's kind of how these are designed. They're disposables, which is really a shame.
Well, there are places to recycle where I live.
Yeah, make sure you recycle it. Yeah,
recycling place.
Yeah,
and I go there often.
Good.
Thanks again.
My pleasure. Take care. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wrapping up a great weekend of shows and calls, and I thank everybody who's called in. And I thank, of course, Kim Schaffer for screening those calls, and Nathan Staten, our musical director, for spinning the hits. Don in Temecula. Hey, Don.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for hanging on.
Oh, that's okay.
To the bitter end.
Yeah. No, actually, I got in after 4 o'clock, so I...
Oh, you're not bad. Okay. All right. You and Larry are next, and then I'm going to take on out of here. What can I do for you?
Okay. Just 3 quick ones, I hope. If I can't get to them all, then that's fine. The 4K TVs at Costco, are they really 4K?
Yes.
Because I saw something about, upscaling.
Well, they're 4K, but they upscale the content you're getting nowadays, which is, for the most part, not yet 4K.
Gotcha.
So just as when HD came out, we rated and reviewed TVs based on their ability to take standard definition content or DVD-style content and upscale it to 1080p. And if it did a good job, that was a good TV. Some of them weren't so good.
Yeah. Okay.
So, these will do it. I mean, it's early to buy a 4K TV because there's so little 4K content.
Okay, so you're still recommending to wait until next year?
What I'm waiting for is... and it'll probably be sometime this year, is TVs that support the HDR standard, that support the whatever. There isn't a standard defined yet for the color space. There are two of them. Once it kind of settles out to whatever the standard is for 4K, that's probably the time to buy. Because by then there'll be content. You know, right now the content is mostly streaming, which means even though it's 4K, it's not going to look very good.
Yeah. Okay.
So I don't think there's a lot of drive. If you need a new TV, get one. Get a 4K one if you need one now.
No, it's just because, I'm seeing, $700, $500 off. So.
Yeah. Yeah, because you know why? They want to move them out because the next generation's about to come out.
Right. Okay. Next question real quick. Are there any reference books that are really in-depth on Mac OS X? I know you can read the user manual.
Yeah. Well, my friend David Pogue writes every time a new Mac OS X comes out, writes what he calls the missing manual. He's got a series of these, which is basically all the stuff that isn't in that brochure that they call a manual.
Yeah.
So certainly that's a good start. I like his books.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you probably can get a lot of this online. I always read my friend Rene Ritchie and Serenity Caldwell write really good kind of primers for their website, imore.com. And so whenever, there's a new thing like Apple came out with its photos, I read, they go into great depth. And those often are, as good as you can get as far as like the missing features and so forth. But if you need one book, one reference book, David's are pretty good.
Okay. Last quick question. I've heard you talk lots of times about, if you get a virus, to wipe your machine.
Yeah, we're just talking about that, yeah.
And then I've got Carbonite. But then if you get a virus and you don't really know you have it and you're doing your backups.
Are you backing up the virus?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
The reason is a virus, in order to infect your system, a virus has to run a program. It has to be a program that runs.
Okay.
And so when you're backing up data, you're not backing up programs. You're backing up .doc, .mp3, .mp4. You're backing up data files. Now, there are some specialized cases
where a data file can bite you. But the reason it can bite you is because of a flaw in the thing that's being used to play it. So Winamp had a security flaw in it. It's used to play back MP3 files. So a specially crafted MP3 could inject malware in your system when played back through that bad version of Winamp. But absent the bad version of Winamp, the MP3 can't do anything. So even if you back that up, as long as you've been updating Flash and Adobe Reader and your browsers and your operating system, even if you happen to back up a malformed data file that's supposed to trigger an exploit, it won't, because the hole has been fixed. So it's fine to back up and restore data almost always.
Okay. So everything on Carbonite should be safe.
Yeah.
So
then I wouldn't recommend backup you're not backing up. It's very, very specific cases that you could conceivably back up a virus. For instance, remember when Microsoft Word documents contained macros, and there were macro viruses. That is a program. So that could be actually stored in a doc file. But for that reason now, Word doesn't run those macros automatically.
I see. Okay. Yeah. And then when are the show notes for everything you just told me?
That's a very good question. We are recording ahead because I'm technically on a boat right now. So I don't know if we'll put those show notes up until the day of the show. I don't know what our plans are. Probably not. Maybe a little bit early. I don't know. But it won't be right away. Yeah.
Okay. Any idea when the show's happening?
This is for January 3rd. We're in 2016. Hey, thanks for the call.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Leo.
Let's see if I can get one more in before the end of the show. Larry in Manhattan Beach. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thanks for calling.
How are you? It's been a while. I spoke to you a while ago. I have a Windows 10 upgrade mystery/disaster. I don't know where to go, but I have a computer, one of my computers, it's one that was actually a gamer that was built by my son. It was running Windows 10 just fine.
Yeah.
He came home from school and said, oh, it's time to run some Windows updates.
Uh-oh.
Ran the update.
Yeah.
And won't boot. Your PC / device needs to be repaired.
Yeah.
0xC, whatever.
Yeah.
So we've been all over the internet looking at this thing. So then I thought, okay, what would Leo do? So I got out my Ubuntu disk, loaded it up, runs fine.
Leo would blast Linux out of that thing and never run Windows 10 again. Is that what you're saying?
Runs fine. Well, the problem is running Linux just fine, but we want Windows 10.
It's nothing wrong with your hardware. There's nothing wrong with your hardware. So but that was a good test to see if there's anything wrong with the hardware. I don't think there is. So here's the deal. It's not unusual for Windows 10 updates to crash Windows. Generally, that blue screen that you're seeing says, would you like us to fix this? Does it?
Well, it says to get a Windows repair tool of some sort.
Oh,
what I did is I used the media creation tool. I made a brand new ISO. We booted from it. The ISO gives you the same error message as the update did.
I see why you tried Ubuntu. Okay.
We tried gpartit.
I see.
Wiped out the partitions. And
so you're getting, even on a clean version of Windows, you're getting the same error.
Yes. Windows doesn't want to do it, but Ubuntu does. Actually, I tried a couple other Linuxes. They did, too. Is this just a bad? Is this something in this most?
It's an incompatibility between Windows 10 and probably the drivers on Windows 10 and your particular hardware.
Wow.
So, and this is not unheard of. It's unusual. Yeah, you could wait for the next version. It's unusual. We just got a new version, if you are not using the current, you should go and get the current media creation tool and the current ISO. If there's a new version, try it.
I think I have the latest one because
1511 is the laptop. As we record this, and as I said, we're recording early. It's 1511. So, but yeah, that might fix it. In other words, Microsoft may slip into that update, that install updated drivers that work. What kind of machine is it?
This is a home built gamer.
Yeah, and it was working with Windows 10 before.
Yes, it was working fine. It was working great. It was running all the video games.
So what happened is they put something new in it, probably an updated driver that's not compatible. Right? So it's probably also in the ISO. In fact, I know it is. And unless others are having this problem, they won't fix it. They think they've made it better.
Ooh.
Yeah. So and the problem with
ISO.
The problem with writing your own, building your own machine is there's no one to complain to.
Well,
hey, hang on. I want to talk to you after the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Kim. Thanks, Nathan. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. All right. Did I just made that one, huh? The problem is, all right, we're done. Thank you, everybody. But I'm going to keep talking to Larry. So the problem is, yeah, so it worked fine. Did it work fine for a while?
Oh, it was running. It has been running Windows 10. It actually first started with the preview.
What's the video card in there? Is it an NVIDIA or an AMD?
It's an NVIDIA, and it's a fairly new one actually.
Okay. Because there are some known issues with video cards in Windows 10.
Okay.
Boy, you got an interesting.
What we have is 1511 build. The latest build.
Yeah, 1511 is the current. Yeah, 1511 is the November update. And there's nothing since then, as we are speaking in real time now. But you ran Ubuntu and it ran fine. So that's a reasonable way to try to see if there's some physical problem, a RAM issue or a hard drive. Well, you wouldn't test the hard drive by doing this.
Yeah, well, we tried gparted and wiped out all the partitions and made new partitions.
Yeah, it's possible, not likely, that there's a hard drive error that's a, you know, kind of a critical sector of the hard drive that Windows needs. This is interesting.
It's an SSD hard drive.
Interesting. Well, if you got another hard drive lying around, I wouldn't mind trying it with a different hard drive just to
see. A different hard drive.
Yeah, if you've got a bad cell in, there aren't very many areas that are fixed, but there are some. And if you've got a bad cell in that particular area, it could be the cause of this. And Linux wouldn't show that up because you're not installing it, but B, it may not need the same.
Oh, no, we installed it. Actually installed it.
But it may not use the same critical areas, right?
Got it. Okay.
So, for instance, if the bad cell where the master boot record needs to be, you're hosed.
Huh.
So that would be my one guess anyway. And it sounds like you might have a hard drive or two lying around.
We probably do, yeah.
Yeah. It's not forever. It doesn't have to be Speed Demon. The idea is, well, can I take this Windows 10 ISO, install it on this hard drive, and will it work? And if it does, well, bingo, now you need to get a new hard drive.
It wouldn't be too big of a deal.
No, that's minor. But it is also possible that this is the scenario I'm envisioning, that Microsoft, in their infinite wisdom, decided to push out a new driver for, let's say, that NVIDIA card, which happens not to work. But they think it's an upgrade. Now, there is a chance that others are going to say, hey, fix this, and it gets fixed in the next, you know, slipstreamed update.
Okay. Processor is an old, the computer is about 7 years old. Processor is an old AMD Phenom.
Oh, hold the horses. Yeah. So there are known processor incompatibilities in Windows 10, considerable number.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Ooh.
So I would look up compatibility with that processor.
Okay.
There are known. Yeah. You cannot use Windows 10 with a large number of processors.
Oh, it was running just great until the update.
Yeah, they fixed it.
Yeah, yeah.
They fixed it. The Phenom could be the problem, to be honest.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll check into that. I don't know. So, thank you for staying on.
Yeah, yeah. Hard drive Phenom. This is it's so fun to build it, and it's a great education for your son, but. You're seeing the real reason I don't recommend it anymore is there's nowhere to go for help.
Yeah. Well, it was when he was 13 when he built the machine.
Oh, so it's been, so he's now 20?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Now he's 20.
That's awesome. Yeah, older hardware in Windows 10 are often problematic.
It's too bad. That machine was just a screamer gaming.
Yeah. Machine. Well, you could get a new motherboard. Everything else is probably fine.
I could put Windows 7 back on it.
Or you could put Windows 7, which is probably a better idea. Yeah. No, I run Windows 10 on probably an equally old Macintosh.
And it's fine. But it's just sort of kind of hit or miss. It has an Intel CPU.
Well, it's an Ubuntu machine at the moment.
not bad, but not great for gaming.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, unless you love Tux Racer, you're probably out of luck.
Okay. Well,
all right. Hey, great to talk to you.
Cruise.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.